for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 403 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. As always, thanks so much for listening. This week is the return of Ed Jowett from Shades of Vengeance. He's got a new Kickstarter going for Era the Empowered Volume 1, an 84-page graphic novel. As I'm recording this, he's almost there at his $500 goal. It's a great number of stories described this way. As superhuman powers emerge across the world, three individuals have to contend with not only villains, but other types of problems. We talk about how these stories came to be, as well as what other projects Shades of Vengeance are working on. Then I'm starting a new segment. I've been doing a lot of interviews at conventions, and I haven't been able to fit them in the schedule. So what I'm going to do is every episode, I'm going to add one of those interviews so I can make these as timely as possible. Recently, I was at New York Comic Con, and I had the chance to briefly catch up with Joshua Williamson, one of the big writers at DC these days, doing Flash, Batman, and Superman, and other projects as well. We talk about all these good things, and he gives us an idea where things are going with DC and his other projects, so I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show.
Hi everyone, Ed here from Shades of Vengeance. All my life, I have wanted to create universes and tell stories inside them. I don't think they have to be the kind of stories you see in mainstream comics either. I believe real stories that speak to people are the important thing, especially when the setting is something beyond reality. With that in mind, I assembled a team of some of the best writers and artists in the business, and we all worked night and day to make these stories a reality. What we produced was Era the Empowered Volume 1. This is an anthology of three stories about superhumans, empowered in this universe, who have to live their lives as well as come to terms with their powers. Each has a very different approach to their abilities and their life. Thanks for watching. I hope you'll consider supporting this crowdfunding effort to bring the dream of a new superhero universe to reality.
It's always great fun to talk with the folks from Shades of Vengeance, and this time, once again, we're talking with our friend Ed Jowett. How are you doing, Ed?
I'm doing great, Wayne, and thanks very much for having me back. It really hasn't been that long, has it?
No, it's only been a little while, but, you know, when there are things happening, we got to talk about them, so there are things Absolutely. Happening. Now, before we get started, of course, at this time, I want to get it right. I'm going to read from your website, so I'll make sure I get it exactly the right way. I've always muffed it up. So, Shades of Vengeance is a UK-based company which creates tabletop role-playing games and card games. We also create comics within these universes. I always somehow got in my pea brain that you guys make video games, but you don't. So this time I want to set the record straight right from the start.
Well, you're dead right there. We do make tabletop role-playing games and card games. And yeah, it's... The reason that we make comics actually grew from that, but both John, who obviously you've spoken to several times before, and myself, we both have a great passion for comics. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the opportunity to tell stories in a different way is not something to be ignored when you're universe building, mm-hmm. you know, and... You know, the stories that you can tell with comics, you're able to give a different flavor to stories to what you're able to give through other media. Mm-hmm. You write a short story in words, and it will have a flavor, a feel, and you can give you can give exactly the same story a very different feel just by making it a comic and actually telling the story not through your words and what's happening, but through showing people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an opportunity that you don't want to give away, right?
Oh, right, right. It's like the old TV expression. You don't want to tell somebody, you want to show somebody. And that's what comics does real well. And, of course, you know, moving from games and stuff is to comics is, you know, I've talked about this before, the fact that it's a function that can pretty easily take place. You get to fill in some of the gaps that you couldn't talk about, say, when you're doing the other gamings and stuff like that.
Yeah, when you create a universe, you try to build it with as much detail as possible. And the reality is that you can't put every story that you've come up with in your head into the universe because it would just be the hugest book ever. I mean, I've ended up with a 420-page book for Era of the Consortium, and I don't even cover the events of the Bug War that we spoke about just about a month and a half ago now. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, yeah, I mean, I didn't even cover the events that happen there in any level of detail.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's the thing. Yeah. You get to tell the stories when you're ready to tell them or when you want to tell them. So that's a good thing about that. I did want to mention to you, by the way, I got in the mail the other day the Bug War Declaration audio drama script, which I wanted to thank you for, which was cool stuff. I enjoyed looking it over, and if people who listened to the last time, I think we talked about this, and this was one of the benefits for your Kickstarter for the Bug War, the last one.
That's right. Not for the Bug War comic, mm-hmm. But one of the things that we've been doing recently is I was just talking about telling stories in different media. Mm-hmm. It's actually quite exciting because we're able to we've got a fantastic array of voice actors who've all signed up to work with us. Mm-hmm. And we're able to tell the stories that we're telling in the comics mm-hmm. in audio format. And that gives us the chance to kind of focus on different things. What does the world sound like? Mm-hmm. It's a different level of feel. And we talked before about, you know, can you read through the Bug War number one and listen to the audio drama, and will they completely match up and be word for word? No, they won't. Mm-hmm. I've taken some artistic license with making it into an audio drama because when you're converting something from your show into your tell, you kind of have no choice. Mm-hmm. You have to do some telling that you wouldn't do otherwise. Otherwise, people will read it or listen to it rather and go, "I don't know what you're talking about. I'm very confused right now." Mm-hmm. So, these three that are in the Era of the Empowered Volume 1, which we're here to talk about today, are also, we've actually recorded audio dramas for all three of them already. Mm-hmm. So I've adapted them all and we've recorded them all, but there's a little more work to do before they're ready to go out into the world.
Are they going to be one of the benefits for the Kickstarter that you have started?
I think the answer to that is probably no. I think they'll be separate.
Okay.
I think that this Kickstarter is going to focus on the comics side. So one of the things, and this might interest some people who are listening, one of the things that's quite interesting when you become very multimedial, so we do role playing games, we do card games, we do comics, we do audio dramas, we create all of these things. How do you split them up? How do you make sure that although they cross over, there's a degree of Ed doesn't have to keep everything in his brain? Mm-hmm. And for some years, we've actually split the comics and the role-playing games to a reasonable degree, which is why, you know, you spoke to John several times. He's just got married, so he's not available right now.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I've been talking to you just recently. Mm-hmm. But he's very much behind the scenes and working on stuff. He's still our letterer. He's still doing, a lot of dialogue editing and stuff. Mm-hmm. We split those out so that John would mostly deal with the comics and I would mostly deal with the role-playing games.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think audio kind of needs to be split out in the same way. We've got a really talented, young man who's working with us. Oh goodness. I just called someone a young man. I must be getting old. we've got a really talented guy who's working with us. He's sound is his passion. Mm-hmm. I think it's fair to say. If you caught Radio Free Tyrannus, which was another of our audio drama Kickstarters, he played Midnight Terry, the main character in that.
Hmm.
And he sort of is the logical person to pick up many of the duties relating to the audio dramas as we kind of build them up into a slightly larger thing.
And I have to say, looking over the script, your name appears a lot in the contribution list. I mean, my gosh, director, creator, you're one of the writers, story, adaptation for audio, executive producer. You're the announcer as well as one of the additional voices, or at least one, maybe probably more. Man, you do a whole bunch of stuff with the audio stuff. That is your game, isn't it?
And this is another interesting thing that I would advise anyone out there who's listening and thinking they'd like to make a comic or like to make an audio drama or anything creative. When you are the head of a creative project, there's a degree to which you have to be willing to get your hands dirty and do whatever it is that needs doing. And if you want to initiate something, if you want to see it through to the end, one of the reasons that a lot of projects fail is, firstly, people... Well, there are two main reasons. Either people try to do everything alone, and that's really, really difficult. You know, you've got to get help, and I always would advocate that. Mm-hmm. And secondly, it's kind of, oh, no, we don't have anyone to do that. I mean, you can learn to do stuff to a reasonable degree. And certainly, speaking of audio dramas, as you just were about Declaration, mm-hmm. There's a degree to which, you know, I wrote the story in the first place. I wrote the comic with John. Mm-hmm. I was therefore absolutely the logical person to do the adaptation because John wasn't available. And I knew exactly what we were thinking when we wrote it and how we wrote it, how we constructed it and built it and made it the story that it was. So I knew everything that I needed to know to adapt it properly and keep true to the source material. Mm-hmm. That's not to say someone else couldn't have done it, but it wouldn't have been John and my vision. It would have been their vision for how they think it was supposed to be. Mm-hmm. And then I think directing sort of really falls naturally out of that, because when I'm writing stuff, I hear the voices in my head. Don't worry, you don't need to call the guys to take me away to the loony bin quite yet. What I mean by that is, you know, I hear what the characters are trying to say and how they're feeling when they say it. Mm-hmm. And I know what it is that I want to hear when I'm hearing a voice actor speak about it. Mm-hmm. And I think that sort of the writer-director thing is something that's very common in movies as well. And I think there's a good reason for it. Mm-hmm. The good reason being, you know, that vision that I'm talking about, you know, mm-hmm, if mm-hmm. you write the thing and then you direct the thing, then whatever you wrote is going to be what comes to life on the screen. The obvious example being The Matrix.
Right.
The one in my mind that's obvious. You know, the Wachowskis wrote and directed it. They knew what they wanted. They knew what they wanted to see. And they built it, you know, and they built that world by directing the movie to reflect. It's not always perfect. It's not always 100% what you want, but there's a line, and you can say, no, that's not close enough to my reality, to the thing that I wanted. Mm-hmm. We need to redo this. We need to try again.
Which is good. I mean, you're bringing your vision to it, and you're able to translate, because some people only can think of the vision and they don't know how to get it done. You know, but you're able to do all that good stuff, which is, you know, something that's really, you know, it's great for those of us who enjoy the stories. You get to tell the stories in such a way that we understand them or enjoy them.
I think a big part of it, and again, I seem to be giving out advice to potential creatives today. I think a big part of it is knowing where to be flexible, because mm-hmm. there are going to be things that aren't going to work. And you might have this super strong vision. You know exactly how it should look and how it should sound. And you know you can get it perfect. And you know exactly what you want. But it's not always the right thing just because it's what you envisioned. Mm-hmm. And sometimes people will come up with a better idea, or you'll be forced into doing something that's maybe slightly less good. Mm-hmm. And this is where, you know, you see, you know, actors who can't watch their movies. You know, they're like, oh, that movie, I feel so cringy every time I watch it. Mm-hmm. I don't care how much you like it. I feel cringy. Mm-hmm. And I certainly have bits and pieces of my work where I do that. I'll be reading through one of my comics and I'll turn the page and I'll go, oh, my God, why did I let that slip through? Why did I just say yes that day, you know, rather than saying no? And mm-hmm. regrets are a thing. Mm-hmm. Right. They're usually not worth having. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the bits, and that's one of the wonderful things about working in a team, because mm-hmm. there are things that John writes and thinks of that I would never, ever give the green light to automatically. Mm-hmm. But when I'm working with John, you know, I think, oh, well, you know, we've really got to work together. There's got to be some of me and some of him in this project. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to curb his too silly ideas, and he's going to make it just silly enough. Because I tend to be very serious. I'm the straight man, and he's the funny. And I, you know, we pull each other towards the middle. Mm-hmm. And when one of us really wants something, mm-hmm. we fight hard. Mm-hmm. And we also have been working together long enough. And that's one of the wonderful things about a long-term partnership. Mm-hmm. We've been working together long enough that when he says to me, Ed, I really, really want it to be like this. Mm-hmm. I know that he really means it, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm not going to change it behind his back. I'm not going to go, yeah, that's fine, and then sort of go in a different direction or something. Mm-hmm. If he really thinks it needs to be this way, he has a reason, even if he can't express it. Mm-hmm. And there's a level of trust you've got to have in the person you're working with that they're not just going to make something crap. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're going to make something that suits their vision, and you're going to make something that suits yours. Mm-hmm. And aligning visions almost never happens. Mm-hmm. The thing to do is to embrace it. Embrace mm-hmm. the fact that they're introducing variety into what would otherwise be just your work.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, sounds really great. I mean, so far, everything's been tremendous that I've seen. It's just been great stuff. So you guys have a great partnership going, and you're telling great stories, which leads us right to the Kickstarter that's going right now. In fact, we're recording this a little early, and the truth of the matter is your goal, according to the Kickstarter, is $500. And you got half of that in the first day, if I remember.
We launched, it's about 36 hours as of recording since I launched it.
Wow. Because now you're almost there. I mean, you're coming down almost. The other side. And that's really good. By the time this posts on the Sunday, it's probably going to be that you have already gotten there. And that's what I'm hoping for anyway. I've already pledged, so I'm looking forward to this to keep going. But you guys have a good history with Kickstarters and things. You've done a lot of them extremely successfully. So, I'm very positive about this one. I'm concerned. I imagine this is going to go just like all the other ones. That's going to, you're going to get into the stretch goals and all kinds of good things.
I'm really hoping so, because this is, you know, this is our Here We Are mm-hmm. book, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. All three of these characters have had adventures. Mm-hmm. They, you know, and we're ready to go, okay, look, we're collating these three stories now because they're important. Mm-hmm. And they're important as a group, not just individually for those characters. We've spoken many times, you and I, about is there going to be a team up? Mm-hmm. John and I agreed a long time ago, an embarrassingly long time ago, about 2 years. Mm-hmm. That before there was a team up, we had to do a trade paperback with these three characters. And this is step one towards that team up that we're talking about. And I am excited to be able to tell you, I think you're the first to know, that the team up is currently being written by John and I. We've established the story. We know exactly what it looks like. There are, so Blue Shift number 2 has already come out, as I believe you're aware. Mm-hmm. Violet number 2 is long since written, and actually Ramad, the artist who worked on, Lacunas, Pencils and Inks, Blue Shift, all of it, Violet, all of it. Mm-hmm. And he took over that line. Hmm. He's been working on Violet number 2 for some time. I believe we're on page 18. Hmm. As of recording, it may even be finished, before this goes up. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be going up before long. It needs lettering, it needs laying out. There's more to do, but, we're really approaching. And then there's going to be a Penumbra comic, which will introduce the team up, which will feature those four characters. Mm. So Lacuna, Blue Shift, Violet, Penumbra, they're the first team up. They are, if you like, the untold story that happened between Lacuna. So anyone who knows, I should go take 5 steps back here. Hmm. Anyone who knows Iridium Powered already will know that Lacuna is going to have an adventure with several other superheroes in the near future relative to where these adventures take place. Mm-hmm. So in the role-playing game, the whole timeline is laid out. And if you, you know, if you look through the role-playing game timeline, you can see what's coming. What you can't see is what the story that's happening is, right? You get a very limited view through the written short stories. Mm-hmm. And most of those written short stories don't focus on these characters. A few of them do, but most of them do not. In fact, Blue Shift, I think, only appears about 5 or 6 times in the entire 150 pages of story in that book.
Wow.
Because I don't need to tell their stories there. I want to tell their stories as comics. Mm-hmm. And there are other characters. You know, we have the opportunity in the role-playing game to tell the story of a huge variety of characters and have a massive overarching plot that, honestly, with comics, we would take hundreds of issues to get through. And I'm a little impatient, I won't deny. So the story's out there. But I think how you tell the story is as much important as what it is, which is the only reason that I went to see Batman v Superman. Because you've already told me everything I need to know in the title. The two are going to fight, right? What matters is how they get there. And whether you found the story disappointing or not, you went in with an expectation that they were going to fight. And you were interested in finding out how they got to that situation.
Right.
So I don't think that ruins the movie inherently. I'm not a massive fan of the movie. I don't think it's as bad as some people say it is. I'm very moderate on that.
Yeah, see, I'm more than moderate. I really liked it. I thought some of the things that people thought were ridiculous, I actually thought were pretty brilliant. And so
I'm going to be honest. Lex Luthor, I know a lot of people complain about him. I actually enjoyed that, right? I enjoyed that take on Lex Luthor. You know, he's this kind of hyperactive kid who's got to grow up to become the Lex Luthor that we know.
I'm like you. I want progress in my characters. I don't necessarily have to have everybody have already developed. I like people who move from place to place. So when I saw Luthor in that way, I said, well, he's got somewhere to go.
Yeah.
I like that.
He's not the Lex Luthor we know yet.
Right.
And it's sort of the one universe to the left kind of principle. You know, it's not faithful to the character that everyone knows from the comics. Okay, cool, good, because I've read hundreds of those comics, and I know what that character's like, and I'd love to see a new take, you know?
Well, that's the thing.
I think that's nice.
Yeah, just like you, I don't necessarily have to have, and I'm not demeaning people who feel this way, but I don't have to have exactly the same character in every single comic. Like Batman has been many different characters
over
his experience. Yeah. And I've liked many of them. It just depends. I mean, I don't necessarily have to have the same exact character, but there's some people who say that every movie should be exactly like the comic. It should be just like a visual representation of exactly what the comic was. But I think the mediums are different. And so you have to be careful to tell the story in such a way that's appropriate and understandable in the medium you're working in.
And not just that. I think that sometimes it's nice to have a change. Venom. I watched the Venom movie, and I was so pleasantly surprised by that movie for several reasons. Because as a writer, they spent 40 minutes at the start of the movie building who Eddie Brock was. Right? They didn't just leap into, oh, now he's Venom. You know, they made him a person. They showed him who you were. They destroyed his life. They took him to the bottom point. They showed that you needed to, you know, that he needed to do something. And that's when the real story started. And they were fine with taking the time to do that. Equally, it's the way that in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Spider-Man was already a thing. You didn't have to watch him get bitten by a radioactive spider. You don't need to know that. We all know that. Right. And he was already a thing, and no, he wasn't entirely developed. And yes, he had tons of space. And yes, the Iron Man thing was a thing, and so on. And it gave you this option that you don't have to retell. Because one of the things that gets me about Batman movies is every single Batman movie has to have his origin story. Do we really think that anyone doesn't know his origin story by now? You know, And that's one of the things that I don't like about many of the Batman movies that have happened, because they have to tell it again and again and again. Mm-hmm. That said, I absolutely loved what they did in Flashpoint.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because it was something different. It was that situation turns out a different way, and suddenly the world is different.
Yeah, yeah. See, that was the thing I really loved. I could go on Flashpoint for a long, long time. I really enjoyed the changes that they made. It was so different. I mean, it's not a secret anymore. I mean, you know, that the father is the one that survives the encounter, not the son. And the wife, you know, the mother is a result of this, actually.
So damaged by it.
So it's amazing.
It's just such an interesting idea that you don't, you know, and in order to accept that, you have to accept that Batman is going to be someone different now.
Yeah.
And Batman is not the person who you know.
Yeah.
And you get to see it through the eyes of the Flash and be shocked.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which I think is also great because it gives you that, hang on, Batman, what? and you're just like, okay. That's really kind of, they accept that we're going to be a bit thrown by this, and it's cool, and it's fine, and the fact we're being thrown is fine. It's a good thing, right? Because you're saying that we're allowed, because Flash is thrown.
Yeah. See, that whole thing was just a brilliant move on my part. I enjoyed it. I was surprised by so many things in that thing. So, but, you know, your writing surprises me. I have to tell you, your guys are so enjoyable to read. You know, they're very human. They're very, you know, things happen to them that we can understand, you know, as well as there are elements of them that, of course, we can't understand. We don't have superpowers and stuff. But we can understand their ability to deal with these circumstances, which are unusual.
I think that's the axis of superhero stories for me. Mm-hmm. Because everyone's a bit different. And even so, everyone has the same situation. Mm-hmm. And even between Lacuna and Violet, they have almost exactly the same situation at one point in each comic. Mm-hmm. And yet they approach it so totally differently, because they are fundamentally totally different people.
Mm-hmm.
Right? There's no, you know, there's no similarity between the way they are approaching that situation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you have the choice. And that was one of the things I loved about doing the Lacuna audio drama, because I got to work with Masako X, mm-hmm. who is he's part of Team Four Star.
Mm-hmm.
And he worked with us on Lacuna. He actually voiced Lacuna.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the way in which he expressed the emotion that Lacuna was going through was really captivating.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the interesting thing, because it wasn't exactly what I'd thought when I initially wrote that comic with Amy Allwarden.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a lovely new take on it, and it was just very slightly different to what I had intended.
Hmm.
And it was what he had got from reading the comic. And in a lot of cases, I left that in place because I liked it as a different way of doing things.
Hmm. Isn't that interesting? Because creative people always come to stuff and they bring sometimes something that you may not have, as the original creator, not have have thought of. And that's kind of fun.
Yeah. And it's one of the, as I was saying earlier, it's one of the wonderful things about working in a team, because you get that different perspective. Oh, I thought you meant this.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can go, yeah, that's exactly what I meant. Definitely. Yep. That's such a good idea that I must have meant it. And, you know, you have the chance to kind of go, oh, you know, yeah, well, maybe I just didn't express it that well in the first thing I wrote. You know, yeah, definitely. And it gives you that opportunity for a new dimension,
mm-hmm.
on what you're doing. And for me, it's been a really interesting sort of creative study, mm-hmm. to do the comics and also do the audio dramas, mm-hmm. and see where I think they should differ and see how I think they should differ.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't have, prior to this, I don't have a massive amount of experience in writing audio dramas.
Mm-hmm.
I've listened to my fair share, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I enjoy them, but actually writing them is kind of a new challenge.
Mm-hmm. which is supremely cool. I mean, it's great that you get to flex different kinds of muscles when you're doing these things. You're going places creatively that you haven't gone before.
I think it's important as a creative, because a lot of creatives burn out. Mm-hmm. And I think that the reason that a lot of creatives burn out is because they do a thing, and then it's very easy to fall into the trap of doing the same thing.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Because I have had to fight that quite hard on my role-playing games. Mm-hmm. So I in total, over the last 6 years, have published 84 books.
Wow. Wow.
Many of those have been for the role-playing games, and some of them have been for the comics. Mm-hmm. I think I've published 13 comics, including this one, when it's published. Mm-hmm. I'll have published 13.
Wow.
And so all of the rest of those are related to role-playing games or a role-playing game core rule books or whatever. Mm-hmm. And I have felt the urge to just phone it in and make something that's barely different from something else I've made before.
Mm.
Because it's easy.
Yeah.
You know, and I think when creativity becomes easy, there's a risk that it stops being valuable.
Yeah. Yeah. See, that's the thing. You've got to do that, because there are like writers who only want to write a particular kind of a Western, you know, but after a while you've read that story before and you kind of get to that person's books and you go, done that already. And then the time will come and you finally say, I've read those. I'm not going to buy any more of that. So it's good for you to do what you're doing and do things that are different. I like that. So, I wanted to mention, too, there's some really good stuff on the website that I think people are going to enjoy. When you go to the Kickstarter, one of the great things I think about your Kickstarter projects is the fact that you give a lot of really valuable information. And there's a graphic in the About section that has a really great information about each of the characters, which I liked. And I almost want to read them, but I think it'd be better if people look at the Kickstarter and get that.
So that's a really interesting thing, because that was a very late addition, that actual graphic. And I have to thank Robert Nix, who is one of the artists who worked on the rewards with me. Mm-hmm. There is a wonderful artwork print by him of all three characters. Mm-hmm. His concept was that they're doing a race between the three of them. Mm-hmm. And Lacuna's popping out of a wall, kind of going, no, stop, Blue Shift. Mm-hmm. Blue Shift is running down the building, grinning, and Violet's just sort of looking down over them, going, oh, my God. and he actually took a look at the Kickstarter and he said, dude, I think you ought to sort of do something that's a bit more visual, sort of explaining who these characters are. Mm-hmm. And what I did is I went away and I used my honestly fairly limited Photoshop skills to put something together that looks okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and yeah, it does. It's just one sentence for each one that just explains who they are.
Yep.
And a little bit about their adventure.
Mm-hmm. Which is good. I mean, you know, as you give enough information and the visuals are such that they help you understand what the character's going to look like as well as who they are. And I think that's really valuable to getting into the story. I just think it's a great little graphic. I really liked it.
I'll make sure I do that one again then.
I would, because it was really good. Now, the other things I like too is we get sample pages.
Yeah.
Which I always enjoy, because I like to see some of the things that are coming. I mean, don't spoil stuff on me, but tease me along the way. Show me what it is that I will see, and good jumping off points for us to get to into the story. So I really like those. I think those are good. I do want to. You mentioned the stretch goals, and you're actually somebody who's actually got the stretch goals, several of them already listed in the Kickstarter project. So when we get to certain places, what those goals will be, because some people won't do it until after they've, you know, accomplished their goal. So
yeah, I think that it's particularly when you're this close to the goal, I think it's really important that you give everyone an idea that, you know, we do know where we're going with this. We've got sort of more things that you guys can get. Mm-hmm. And particularly, you know, if you get a physical rewards, you'll get certain things. If you get digital rewards, you'll get certain different things. And yeah, I think being able to show that you have a plan is, I mean, this is my opinion, and people are totally free to disagree with it, and I know many do. But I think that if you can prove you have a plan after you're funded, it's an incentive to prove that you know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And given this assuming that we get that remaining $70, this will be my 49th funded Kickstarter.
Wow. I mean, yeah. Wow.
And it's the 51st kick, 52nd Kickstarter. I'm sorry. Wow. That I've run.
That's amazing. I've got to be honest. So there were three that didn't fund. Yeah, well, you know, that's just an amazing accomplishment because, you know, the old daily heart attack business that, you know, you look at it in a day and nobody's pledged in the last 24 hours and you sort of gasp, oh, no, is this the end? Are they not going to do it? But yours have, you know, do you know how many didn't fund as opposed to, you just mentioned how many did, I think.
Three did not fund.
Three did not fund, okay. But you learned a lot from them.
So the first one I learned a lot from, absolutely. That was my very, very first campaign that did not fund. And that leads me to give the same advice to every single person who asks me about Kickstarter, which is go onto your, you know, subset of choice and scroll all the way down to the bottom. Like scroll until you can't scroll anymore. Spend 10 minutes scrolling if that's what it takes. That's where you're at. Don't think that you are in anywhere you would normally scroll to. In terms of the amount of money you're going to bring in, because that is an unrealistic expectation set by Kickstarter deliberately, in a sense, because they push successful projects up through their search algorithms.
Yeah, of course. They want to encourage more people to do it, so that's why they do it.
Well, not just that, but they want people to fund projects that are going to be successful, because at the end of the day, they are a business. You know, they're trying to make money.
Yeah, well, of course. Well, they have to survive too.
Yeah, and then the second one was John and I, it was actually a comics one was the second one, and John and I decided to have an experiment and try to do an entirely black and white comic, you know, as in inked only. And honestly, people didn't want it. And that's just the way it is, you know, relative to our color ones, people did not want it. They didn't back it, they didn't pledge to it, and as you say, we learned a lot. You know, we learned... Okay, our audience would like to see full color artwork. They're used to the brilliant artwork that we have. And I think going back on that is not going to work. So we learned that. The third one was actually a bit of an anomaly because Kickstarter had an error when I actually launched. Well, some people might not know this. So when you submit a project to Kickstarter, first of all, you create the project, you fill it in, you fill all of the story and the rewards and all of the rest of the stuff that you have to do. And then what you do is you submit it for review by Kickstarter. Okay. And when Kickstarter review it, they then send back, yes, you may launch. And then you click the launch button when you want to. Right? So I will often click, you know, to have it reviewed some time before I actually launch it. Because it can take up to 3 business days, and I don't like launching projects late when I've said the project will launch on this day. For obvious reasons. So what I did is I clicked on the button to submit it, and it instantly launched. So Kickstarter made a mistake. And it wasn't a completed campaign. Like, there were still graphics that needed to go in and so on. I have some backers who are very eager, so there are actually 2 backers on it before I could cancel it. And both of them were very good humoured about it. I sent them a message and I said, look, I'm really sorry. This has gone wrong. Kickstarter had an error. There's nothing I can do about that. So I cancelled the project, and it's one that didn't fund as a result. I launched properly a week later, and it funded extremely well. It was last October. It was Era of the Chosen. One of my role-playing games. And it funded extremely well. I want to say it got to about $5,000 offhand. Offhand. I don't recall directly.
Well, it's hard when you got this many. Yeah, I mean, how do you keep them all? How do you keep them all straight?
Yeah, no. It's hard to remember exactly, you know, which one got what number offhand, you know. But, oh, no, I'm wrong. It's $7,500 it brought in.
Okay, well, that's still mighty good.
It did really quite well. It did really quite well. You know, it was a great little project and fantastic. But as I say, Kickstarter accidentally had a defect, and and it launched ahead of time. And that was probably one of the, you know, in the last 3 years, say, I've been running Kickstarter projects for almost six now. In the last 3 years or so, I think that was probably the most stressful moment that I'd had with Kickstarter, because it was like, should I run with this project that launched ahead of time and looks really bad because it's not done, or should I cancel it? And in the end, I did decide to cancel it. And I don't regret that decision at all. But yeah, I mean, as I say, so there are three projects ever that have been truly unsuccessful.
Wow. Yeah, but out of, what, 50 did you say you had? So that's
51 including this one.
That's
52. 52 including this one.
That's what we would call a good batting average.
I think so, especially if you disregard the one that was Kickstarter's fault.
Yeah.
It's sort of a 96% success rate.
Wow, that's mighty good. I mean, there's a lot of people who love to have that success rate, I have to tell you. So that's good on your part.
Well, I will tell anyone out there who's thinking they would love to have that success rate, and it's super easy for me and so on. Every single one of my Kickstarters gets tens of hours of work on its own, and that's prior to launching, right? I have worked hard on every one of these products. I mean, you've already mentioned how my name is an embarrassingly common sight on the declaration script. And that's quite common for me. Every one of my projects has a lot of time and a lot of love in it. And I don't think that anyone is incapable of doing what I've done. It takes time, it takes application, and it takes effort. But I don't think I've ever met a creative who couldn't do it if they wanted to. It becomes a question of, and I'm sad to say this because it's not a fun thing to say, but it becomes a question of what you're willing to sacrifice in order to make it happen. And there are very valid reasons to not want to sacrifice the amount of time and effort that it takes in order to make this stuff happen. You know, and I'm in a situation where I have the time, you know, I have the ability. And I've worked at it hard, but I think that if you are really dedicated to something, you can go away and you can do this.
Well, that makes good sense for that. That's really good. Now, let me give the vitals here, because we got to make sure people know where to go. It's called Era the Empowered, Volume 1, an 84-page graphic novel. The important things to know is that you have until Sunday, November 3rd at 4 o'clock Eastern Time. Before they have to have the money, but you know they're already almost at their $500 goal, and I'm expecting good things from that. But the thing of it is that don't wait that long. I always tell people, don't wait. It's all I got all this time. No, go in there and pledge right now, and then what you can do is you can follow the progress as the Kickstarter does, because you have helped Ed not have to worry every day. Always a good thing.
Yeah, I mean that's true, and one of the things that's worth bearing in mind is the more backers that a project has, the higher up the list it has, and Kickstarter has a very active fan base. And so yeah, if you pledge earlier, it's more likely that we'll reach more of those stretch goals, and everyone will get more rewards. And not only that, there's one other thing, which is I've decided that each day, and you'll know this already, Wayne, because obviously you're already a backer. Each day I'm actually going to be giving a little promo image that you can share on your social media if you'd like to, and a little bit of explanation about it. So today, day one, I gave an image of Lacuna in what I really feel is a bit of an analogy for how it feels running a Kickstarter. He's got a broken leg. He's standing there, he's trying to do something, and he knows that he can't do anything, and the frustration, and he just throws his pipe on the ground. And you know, this image is just something that made me think of Kickstarter in general. Because it does feel like that some days. You know, there's a limit to what you can do as a creator in terms of spreading the word, because no one believes you that your creation is good. Someone else has to tell them. Someone who's not you. So, you know, you can run around and go, oh, yeah, it's so good. You need to listen. You need to watch it. You need to look at it. Mm-hmm. Please, you know, support it. But of course you'll say that. You made it.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
No one trusts you.
Right.
And as more people back it, that's more people saying, yes, I believe that this is a good thing. I believe it's worth it.
Mm-hmm.
As I say, for me, that was sort of the analogy of the frustration that you can feel when you don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm going to be doing is every day I'm going to be giving you guys an image from within Era of the Empowered Volume 1. I'll be giving you a tiny bit of explanation about it and inviting everyone to send it out on their social media and talk about it and say what they think of the artwork and tag at us and tweet at us and go, hey, I love this piece of artwork, or hey, this one's not so good, or what on earth is going on in this picture? I don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or you know, whatever it is that comes to mind when you see it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to hear. I'd love to know.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't plan to give you lettered images. I plan to give you images.
Mm-hmm.
We talked already about show, don't tell. Mm-hmm. John in particular is a big believer of that. And I think it's fair to say that he taught me a lot of what I know about writing comics, the vast majority.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a big believer in show, don't tell. And I'd like to show you. I'd like to show you. I'd like to understand what you think the story is that's going on here.
Mm-hmm. Which is cool. Which is cool. I have to do the description. It's a sentence, but I think it really talks about what this is. As superhuman powers emerge across the world, three individuals have to contend not with not only villains, but other types of problems. And I like that because that really is a nice summary of the different characters. And it's such a good thing. I can't wait to see this come to fruition. Do you know when the graphic novel is going to be available?
Yeah, it should be very soon afterwards. The vast majority of the work's been done.
Mm-hmm. Very cool.
We're very, very close to being able to send it out, to be honest. My hope is that in the next few days, I'm actually going to put a video up on both our YouTube and the Kickstarter showing you a quick flick through of the actual comic.
Oh, wow. Oh, wow.
See, that's good. Because I've got a proof.
Yeah.
I just haven't got around to it today because I had to come and talk to you.
Okay, we'll get to see that sometime soon, though. But I always have to tell the story. There was a guy that started a Kickstarter project, said, "That's a great idea. All you got to do is give me money, and I'll get started on it." And everybody basically said to him, "What? You know, you could take the money and go off to the islands or something like that. You know, how do we know you're ever going to do stuff? You already have product that you can show people what this is going to be like." And I think that's a super accomplishment.
It's a rule of mine. I don't really launch a Kickstarter until I can show them what it's going to be like. You know, you've got to have something to prove that you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, my I'd like to think that my backlog of Kickstarter speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if it says here. 15 comics created to date, including this one. Kickstarters. And obviously a whole bunch more on role-playing games. So, you know, I mean, I'd like to think that I, you know, that speaks for itself, that I know what I'm doing and I will deliver the thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I also like to push a little outside my comfort zone from time to time. Mm-hmm. So one of the things we're doing, we've done several times before, but we've got some awesome rewards here. Mm-hmm. We've got the opportunity to get an artwork print that I mentioned earlier. And if you scroll down to maybe three quarters of the way down the page, it's right there. You can see it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really awesome image. And right below that, we have the Era of the Empowered t-shirt. And it's got all three characters on it, and it's got a slogan. Bravery is just successful stupidity. we debated a lot about what the slogan should be. We had two options. This was one of them. Mm-hmm. And the other one was Heroes Come From Within. And I thought that, you know, just this once I would subvert the trope and say, okay, you know what, we're going to do something a little bit silly, something I would wear.
Mm-hmm.
Because it would make someone smile when they walked past.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Bravery is just successful stupidity.
Mm-hmm.
And that t-shirt is available. You can get that at several of the tiers.
Mm-hmm. Very cool. Very cool. Well, that's a good idea. Of course, you can save that other one for something that comes up in the future. So it's not like it's going to go to waste. So
oh yeah. That's cool stuff. And there's one other reward that's maybe worth mentioning. Okay. I'm not going to claim that this idea is an original idea for me, but it's only the second time that I've really tried to offer it. Mm-hmm. So I had I was browsing through projects as I do, and one of the best things about Kickstarter is that people have so many ideas. There's so much variety, you know, action figures or Funko Pops or you know, you name it. People do weird stuff, right? It's cool, but it's like I would never have thought of it. And one thing that someone did really stuck in my mind, and that was the opportunity to get a copy of the same comic, but it has a cameo cover with a character of your choice, or you. You know, you want to be the person who's being saved by the superhero. We'll draw a cover with you being saved by the superhero. We will print a copy of the comic with that as the cover, and we'll send it to you. And that'll be your copy of the comic. So, you know, you get the chance to, you know, I will work with the artist who did all the artwork here, Romad. And, you know, we'll build your character. We'll make it come to life and we'll add any characters from the actual comic that we think are appropriate. And we'll make a scene with your character. And that'll be the cover of your comic. And that really stuck with me. I thought it was a really interesting idea. And it's something that I'm very confident we can achieve because, you know, we've done so many varied characters and Romad's a master, you know, I won't, you know, even entertain any thought that he can't do a brilliant job. So yeah, I'm really liking, the option, and someone's actually already taken it. Someone's actually backed at that level.
Oh, good.
So we're going to be doing at least one. I don't have any particular limit. Obviously, if it gets to a large number, I might need to split it and just make the next one a month later because it'll take time to do the artwork. And we want to do it properly. We want to do a good job.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, I've written mostly kind of December 2019 as the delivery date, and I think that's bags at the time.
Okay. That's very good.
Even for finishing at the beginning of November because, you know, we know the printer. We've got prints of the vast majority of it ready to go. As I said, I've got a proof that I can show you guys, and I'm hoping to. So yeah, all backers, I'll make sure that's on the updates, or you can subscribe to our YouTube and keep an eye out there.
That's cool. I always like the notion of being, you know, a character on the comic, because those of us who have read comics, you know, there's a reality to it in our heads. And to be part of that reality is something I think a lot of people always treasure. I think that's really cool stuff. So that's really good. Well, you know, obviously, Era of the Empowered is going to come, and it's Volume 1. And anything else, Ed, that you guys are working on that we should know about?
So I've already mentioned the Penumbra comic and the team-up. There is another comic, superhero comic that's being worked on right now that I've not mentioned, which is entitled Melkart. And Melkart is a rather interesting character. Again, anyone who knows Era of the Empowered story already will know who Melkart is. Melkart is a cyborg who, shall we say, think kind of RoboCop, right? But you know, he was convinced that the bad guys were the good guys when he first appeared, and his programming was a bit more malleable. And he was the PR piece to prove. I was very inspired for him, his sort of arc in general, by there was a Transformers episode, Megatron's Master Plan, where Megatron was just like, yeah, the reason we were like evil and stuff was they used an evil ray on us and made us evil. We weren't actually evil all along. And he takes over the world because the Autobots are kicked off Earth. And obviously that's all resolved in that. But that kind of inspired me. So, you know, he's this fundamentally wants to be a good guy, doesn't realize that he's working with the bad guys. But this story is actually, it's the first origin story I've ever written as a comic, I will say. but it's probably not in the sense that you might think an origin story. So yeah, it's quite an interesting one. It features Penumbra, at one point, not prominently, but she's around.
Mm-hmm.
And the story is focused around Melkot, who's, I'm trying to figure out what to give away and what not to give away. Melkot is going to have to deal with a rather difficult problem, while also dealing with his origin.
Mm.
Okay. I actually wrote this one solo, so this is my first solo comic. I almost always write in a pair. Mm-hmm. I've talked about the merits of doing that. You know, I actually wrote this a year ago now. NaNoWriMo. Are you familiar with it? It's National Novel Writing Month.
No, I'm not familiar with that.
So the idea is that you sit down, you write a novel, right? Mm-hmm. You write 2,000 words a day, every day, for 30 days, November. Mm-hmm. And you write a novel. Mm-hmm. Because that comes to about 60,000 words, which is, you know, it's a reasonable length for a novel.
Mm-hmm.
I have, for several years, engaged in what I call ERA-RIMO, which is I'm allowed to write anything I like, 2,000 words a day, as long as it's related to ERA the Empowered, ERA the Consortium, ERA Liars, you know, any of the ERA universe.
Mm-hmm.
And last year in ERA RIMO, I spent a chunk of it writing Melkot.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how come I've written it solo, because of that situation. I love writing with other people. I'm never going to stop doing that. I love working with John in particular. You know, Blue Shift wouldn't be Blue Shift. The Bug War wouldn't be the Bug War if it wasn't for John. Lacuna wouldn't be who he is either without Amy's influence. And Violet wouldn't be anywhere near as compelling a character without Jennifer. So, you know, I have no plans to stop writing with people. I love
mm-hmm.
doing that.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt like it was time for me to write my own comic. And, you know, so I wrote Melkart a year ago. RN, Robert Nix, who drew the print for the Kickstarter, is actually illustrating the whole of Melkart. So I am absolutely thrilled. He is absolutely the right fit for Melkart.
Mm.
It's going to have a slightly different flavor because Ramad's done all the rest.
Mm-hmm.
But that's fine. I don't have a problem with a slightly different flavor from artists.
Mm-hmm.
We've actually already started on drawing it up. Mm-hmm. I've had a draft of the first page.
Mm-hmm.
And I am super looking forward to that because that's, you know, that's a major milestone still. And it's funny, even this far in,
mm-hmm.
you can look at stuff and go, wow, that is actually a major milestone. Mm-hmm. You know,
mm-hmm.
My first comic that I wrote myself, obviously I'm working with the artist, obviously I'm working with John to do the lettering, but mm-hmm. I actually wrote it. And the script that went to the artist is my script that I wrote on my own.
Wow. Congratulations on that. That's great. That's good.
Yeah, I mean, it's really different, and it's a different challenge to working with other people.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And as I said earlier, I love sort of new creativity and new opportunities to create in different ways.
Mm-hmm. Very good, very good. Well, it's ERA the Empowered, Volume 1, an 84-page graphic novel. And as we said, the goal, which I'm sure you guys are going to reach before very long, needs to be accomplished by Sunday, November 3rd at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. Do not wait. Now is the time to go and sign up and back this good Kickstarter project. And, you know, Ed, you guys do wonderful things. And say hi to John for me. I'm sure he's listening. He likes to listen to this podcast.
He never misses it.
So he's a good guy. I always, and sometime what we'll have to do is have both of you guys on, and we'll talk about that stuff, because that would be a fun thing to do.
Yeah, I'd love to.
You guys keep up the great stuff. All I can say is I just know when you're going to do good stuff, it's going to happen. Now, this, you talked about Melkart. Is that going to be coming? Are you going to do a Kickstarter on that before too
long? I undoubtedly will do a Kickstarter on it. It'll probably be in the new year now. There is, and this is another thing to anyone who's looking at launching a Kickstarter, be very aware of Christmas.
Mm.
You know, Black Friday is great. You know, people do go looking around to spend money. Beyond that, you know, once you get to kind of Thanksgiving,
mm-hmm.
and between Thanksgiving and Christmas, you're not going to get a lot of funding because everyone is using their disposable income to buy presents for other people.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's fine. There's nothing wrong with that. But bear in mind that if you're trying to fund a project during that time, you will struggle. You know, mm-hmm. you'll struggle more than you otherwise might.
Mm-hmm.
So I generally steer clear of Christmas, you know, from mid-November to sort of early January. I don't do too much.
Okay.
So I think in the new year, you can definitely look out. I don't think it'll be too long into the new year. Mm-hmm. Robert does not hang around. You know, within a day or two of agreeing to do it, you know, I had the first page.
Wow.
So he does not hang around. He's and he is genuinely brilliant. I love his work.
Oh, great. Well, maybe you and I will get to talk at that point again, because that'd be fun to talk about your other stuff, because there's always so many interesting things going on in the stories and how you make them happen and things. I just think it's a great thing. So, Ed, you keep that up, and I just hope that Shades of Vengeance just keeps growing and growing and making good stuff happen, because we need that good stuff around here.
Thank you very much indeed. And thank you, everyone who's listening, for listening to us talk for an hour about, you know, all the things that are going on. Yeah, there is some degree to which I'm still amazed that people actually want to listen to me talk about it.
Always good stuff. So good to talk with you.
Thank you very much.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
To talk with Joshua Williamson, who has made some of the best Flash I've ever read.
Oh, thanks, man.
And is now doing the same thing to Batman and Superman. Talk about, you know, we've got a new storyline coming with Flash. Why don't you tell us briefly about that?
Well, right now, we're in the middle of the storyline that we've been telling with the new forces and Black Flash and Hunter Zolomon's coming back. We're going to have the October issues of 80 and 81 are about how the Black Flash is hunting for Hunter Zolomon, and Barry wants to try to save Hunter. But Hunter has his own, like, plan. You know, like, there's reasons why he's been doing what he's been doing over the last year. Ever since Flash War, he has, like, a plan. And then the storyline we're doing after that, and you can see in each issue, we've been building the rogues back up, right? They're upgrading, they're becoming a family again. They have a mission that they want to accomplish. And that's been building. And so the next storyline we're going to do is called Rogues Reign. And it's going to be about the rogues taking over the city. It's going to be about them doing things we've never seen them before, the level we've never seen them act. You know, because normally the rogues, they're thieves, they're Robin Hood, you know, they're the rogues, right? And they're a bit like big, over-the-top supervillains. And so we're going to see them as big, over-the-top supervillains for the first time. We're really going to show them in that kind of light, which we haven't really seen a lot, and see how Barry reacts to that, and what it does to the rogues to be that way, because that's not who they are, right? Like, they're the rogues, they're thieves, you know, they're blue-collar workers who want to do what they have their own code to live by. And they do it for the money, they do it for a lifestyle, and now they're in a different situation that they're not normally used to being in. It's not really the most healthy for them as a family. And getting to kind of tell a story about them in this situation and show them, like, this, I feel like it's been building for a while, like, going all the way back to the first story arc I did with them, when they were gonna, like, basically break up so that they can get away from the Flash, and they realized that was the key, you know? And then doing the storyline with Cold Day in Hell, where Cold was becoming like a mob boss. So I really have been building this thing, and then even with the Trickster storyline, it was all building this. It was all about building them trying to become something they're not, and seeing how they react to that, and seeing how Barry sort of reacts to it. I don't want to give stuff away.
Mm-hmm. Well, probably some will react better than others.
Yeah. So you get to see sort of the reactions they have and how they deal with it. That's really that big storyline, and that'll end in January, and then we start getting back into another big storyline that we're building that'll be tying in a thing we've been building since issue 50, and Godspeed will come back, and it's it's gonna be pretty crazy. It's gonna tie back into some stuff. I think there'll be some surprises.
I thought of you when I saw Godspeed on the Flash on the TV. I wonder. You must have known that was coming.
I knew it was coming. Yeah, I seen the suit, and I remember when I saw the suit, I was like, "Oh, it's a cool suit. Looks like a good cosplay." And they were like, "Oh no, that's real. It's gonna be on the show." And I was like, "What?" But yeah, I got to have also Bloodwork is on the show too.
Yeah.
He was on. He was only a short arc. He was just a 4-issue arc we did during the Negative Speed Force stuff, and so he'll be on the show, which is pretty crazy. It's a character I created when I was a little kid.
So wild.
Yeah, dude, it's super weird. It's super weird, and he's like a main villain next season. You know, he's a major part of the first half. So it's a lot of fun.
Great. Now, Batman Superman, I gotta talk about that. I always like it when Batman and Superman get together, but on the other hand, it's a real challenge. The stuff that you guys are doing, I mean, the Batman Who Laughs is the creepiest creation from DC in a long time. And so what was it like to spun all these different things where he created these people who he had
affected, yeah.
And so all that stuff, the Shazam one, I mean, that was a scary one. That is totally different from Billy Batson's character.
Yeah.
What was it like to pick out these different villains or turn these people into villains?
I try to think of it from the perspective of the Batman Who Laughs. Like, why would he pick them? There's some different reasons why would he pick them? And I try to approach from that first. And you know, we made a list. There was some that we knew we had to do, you know, like Gordon had been built in for a long time. So was Hawkman, because Hawkman was already tied into Metal, and his story with Metal wasn't over. So we knew with those two. Other ones, I can't talk about Supergirl too much without getting into spoilers of why she was picked. But let's say, I'll use the examples of like Shazam. You know, Shazam is obviously power, he's magic. I think that when you go back and look at something like Underworld Unleashed, right? Like, Underworld Unleashed, you thought that Neuron was going after Supergirl. He was going after Shazam, because Shazam is the most pure, right? He's the most innocent. And so there was a whole thing of like how, if he could show that he could corrupt him, he could corrupt anybody. So it was almost like it was a warning shot, but not even a warning shot. It was like, I'm coming for you fast and hard, you know? So it was like, that was part of him. Blue Beetle, it was about how he wanted a character that Blue Beetle, people would underestimate, you know? Like, Blue Beetle's a great character, and I love Jaime, and I wanted to show somebody that I think people underestimate sometimes, and I think Batman Who Laughs felt the same way. And he was like, what if I corrupt this person and use them? They'll never expect it. Donna Troy, a lot of the same stuff, where it's like she's a character that actually has things to be angry about. And I think he wanted to corrupt that and use it for his own purposes. So that was a lot of deciding. And we had lists, we talked about it, we thought about a bunch of different characters, and we settled these six because we were able to find story reasons for all of them.
Now, I keep seeing on Facebook you're getting together with Scott and with
Tynan.
Are you like planning all this Batman Superman out, or is there other projects you're working on? What's happening with all that?
I mean, there is a big storyline we're building toward. Obviously, you know, the stuff that's been going on in Justice League, the stuff that's been going on in Batman and Superman, it's all building to something really big. And, you know, we've already announced that we're doing Year of the Villain, Hell Arisen, or Year of the Villain, Ha. Like, we're already building this storyline, and that's going to be about Lex Luthor versus the Batman Who Laughs. And that story with Batman reflects that's going to be a war between the two of them, and that war will lead into an even bigger story than we have planned. But it's like, yeah, you know, me and James and Scott, we've been talking to each other for years, and the story that we're in the middle of, we've just been planning it out for years, you know, and now we're probably getting to some stuff, and it's all going to explode into something even bigger.
How long is the Batman-Superman storyline going to go on?
This one currently, so issue 5 leads directly into Year of the Villain, and then issue 6 ties into that stuff as well, and then that storyline is there in the book, and then 7 and 8 are going to be a standalone story. They definitely do some ramifications of those things, but we'll stand alone, and then we'll be able to move into a new story after that.
It must be great, because you talked to me once about how it was great not to have to look for work, but to actually, you know, the work comes to you and do that stuff. So now you can create instead of having to find work.
I mean, you're still trying. It's interesting. You're still pitching story, right? Like, it really comes down to, I mean, I am at a good point right now where I don't have to look as much. But I still have that drive, that hunt inside of me, you know, to look for this stuff and try to build work, essentially. But with all of that, it's like, it all comes down to trying to find the best stories to tell.
All right. Anything we should know about what you're doing besides all these good things? What else should we know about that you've got coming?
I mean, I think the stuff we're doing in Flash is really exciting. The stuff that we're doing with Batman and Superman, I don't know about, but I have some creator-owned books that are coming out in the future. I'm still working on Birthright. I have another horror book that I'm working on. I can't talk about it, but there's a lot of really fun stuff coming up next year and 2021.
Oh, wow, so that's pretty good. Well, we'll look forward to it. It's going to be
busy.
Great stuff.
It'll yeah.
be, well, that's good for us. We right get to on. Read your stuff, so thanks.
Thanks, man. It's always good talking to you.
You too.
That's a wrap for this episode. Until next time, keep reading your comics.